It's really good to be with you today. I'm calling this my tour of Bayview summer. For the past 3 weeks, I've been preaching at Bayview and York Mills at Bayview United. And so I'm just going to stop at all the churches on Bayview this summer and see what's going on. It's appropriate. Eric asked me when I came why I didn't share my roots in my bio, because basically it's because I've been a few places, but my roots are in the Salvation Army. And I actually went to school next door when there was still a school there. Of course, now instead we have condominiums, which is what we do in Toronto. When we can't figure out what else to build somewhere, we build a condominium. But I decided 30 years later I'd try again. So now I am at Emmanuel, but it is great to be here today. I assume you watch the news. I watch the news. I read the paper periodically, I get news online, but I'm still old enough that I watch the news on television. And sometimes you have to ask yourself why you bother watching the news, because it doesn't cheer you up at all, does it? It doesn't make you feel particularly good. We're seeing forest fires in BC, the worst in 60 years. We are being told we're going out to Vancouver in a little over a week, and be interesting to see where things are by the time we get there. We are being told that this is because of climate change, and it's getting worse. It's certainly not getting better. In fact, I saw a couple of things this week that I thought were quite remarkable. One was that in India, certain parts of India, it's getting so hot that they say that by the year 2100, as many as 40 million people in India could be forced to move. They could be displaced because it will be too hot to live where they currently live. 40 million people, that's more than the population of Canada. And then I saw something else this week about Florida, and they were showing a map of Florida, and if current water movement continues by the year 2100, just about half of the state of Florida will be underwater. So if you have property there, you might want to consider that in your future planning, but it's just quite remarkable. I am something of a political junkie, and even on Sunday mornings, I shouldn't, but I invariably, when I get up, put on the Sunday morning talk shows, and of course now, watching news out of the U.S. is basically to find out what's happening with the Trump White House. What crazy thing is he saying or doing this week? And it's more entertaining and almost more unbelievable than a reality show, isn't it? It's quite remarkable. We also know about heightened tensions in North Korea and getting closer and closer to being able to launch a nuclear strike. And then, of course, if you remember a few months ago, all the talk was about famine in Africa, and because our attention spans are so short, we kind of forgot about that. But I looked the other day, and apparently, right now, in Ethiopia, 6 million people are at risk of starving to death. 14 million people in South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen. 20 million people at risk of starving to death. Again, not quite the population of Canada, but a remarkable number. And so with all of that, you could be excused if you decided you wanted to pull the covers over your head and go back to bed and say, what could I possibly do about all of this? Why do we even bother? And it's a valid question. And if you say to me you've never asked those questions, what's the use, why bother, then you're probably lying to yourself. Because we all get discouraged, and we all wonder why. I've spent the last 12 years working in the inner city here in Toronto, both in St. Jamestown and more recently in Regent Park, and I still live in the St. Jamestown community. When we went to St. Jamestown, we adopted a park in our community. We would go in every week and clean it up, and then once a month we had mercenary barbecues and picnics. We would barbecue hot dogs at our house across the road, and then we would take them over and serve them to our neighbors, along with some coffee and other things. I had a friend from the city one time said, "This is great. let me get you a permit. And I said, good luck with that. So he tried, and about 2 weeks later, you heard about the stairs, didn't you, recently? About 2 weeks later, he said, just keep doing what you're doing. And I said, thank you, we will. So we would do it, and we'd be over and have our hot dogs and be gone before the bylaw officers even knew we were there. But one time in particular, after we'd shared some food with our neighbors, I was looking around the community, or around the park, and all the way around the park were people sitting having conversations that had been part of the barbecue. A couple here and a couple there and a couple over there. And I thought, wow, community is happening. People are talking to each other. This is remarkable. This is what we want. This is why we're here. This is what we're trying to do. And I felt happy and I felt pleased that this was going on. We cleaned everything up and went back home, and I was sitting in my living room, and a couple of hours later, I heard gunshots. And just around the corner from where we had had that lovely picnic and that lovely experience of community, a young man had been shot at the basketball court, and his life was taken from him tragically. Sometimes we do our best, and then we say, is it enough? And are we really making a difference at all? Our gospel story today is one you know, right? The story of the loaves and the fish. All four gospels have this miracle story of Jesus. That's significant because it's the only one that all four gospels include. And so we know that this story was very important to the early church. This was a story that made the rounds, starting with Mark and then Matthew and Luke and John. And it was a story that was told over and over again. It had great significance for them. We are told that Jesus needed to get away. So he retreated. He went off by himself to recharge his batteries. But we are told that the crowds caught up with him. And he saw them. And Matthew tells us that Jesus had compassion on this crowd. He felt pity towards them. He was tender-hearted towards them. Luke's gospel says it a little differently, and I like that Luke says it this way. Luke says, when Jesus saw the crowd, he welcomed them. He went out of his way to deliberately receive them. That's really, I think, important. Because these are people Jesus didn't know. He was tired, he was probably a little bit grumpy. And yet when he saw them, he received them, he welcomed them. My office is at the Toronto CRC, the Christian Resource Center, down on 40 Oak Street in Toronto, which has been affiliated with the United Church from its beginning days and was started by United Church people. Every Sunday, an organization from Scarborough, the Muslim Welfare Center, comes in and serves a meal out of the CRC. And on some Sundays, in fact, they're getting ready to serve now, I think, they will serve close to 400 people from the community. And it's all restaurant style. People come in and sit down, and the food is brought to them, and the food is all fresh, and it's very good. But one of the things I really like is that they have greeters when people come. These are all street-involved folks, or a lot of them are, or else they're people living in social housing. But they have greeters, and then they have people that will actually seat them. They'll find a couple of seats for people, and they will welcome them and give them somewhere to sit. They just don't say, go on in, find a seat. They actually escort them to their seat, like a maitre d' would do in a restaurant. They make them feel welcome. They make them feel like they belong. They treat them with great dignity. In the psalm that Eric read for us, in verse 9, it says, the Lord is good to all, and his compassion is over all that he has made. The compassion that we show to others flows from the compassion that has been first shown to us. That's how it works. the motto, you had one of your values read this morning. The tagline for the Muslim Welfare Center simply says, service to humanity is service to Allah, service to God. They extend the hospitality to others, the compassion that has been first extended to them. Also in that psalm, verse said, the Lord upholds all who are failing and raises up all who are bowed down. Jesus' compassion in this gospel story was directed first towards the sick and then ultimately towards the hungry. His compassion was for the people that were down, for the people that were hurting the most. And we see that over and over and over again in the Gospels. When nighttime comes, the disciples say to Jesus, send these people home. You know, it's late, nowhere to eat here. Let them go back into town and they can get some food and they can have something to eat. And then Jesus says, you feed them. And the disciples say, we don't have much of anything. They had 5 loaves, we are told, and a couple of fish, which would be a very common Palestinian meal in the day. John tells us that it was a little boy that brought it. Whether that's so or not, I don't really know. It's a lovely touch to the story. But someone had food there and brought the bread and brought the fish. We know what happens then. Jesus tells them to sit down. He takes the bread. He blesses the bread. He breaks the bread. And then he gives the bread to the disciples to give out. And we are told that all 5,000 plus women and children were fed. Some say that could mean as many as 20,000 people, and 12 baskets are left over. Small baskets, if we read the original words, and so kind of a take-home package for each of the disciples. It's a nice touch when you think about it. You know, you got some leftovers. You're going to have lunch tomorrow. There's a lot of debate about what actually happened in this story. If you're conservative and literal, you say, well, it was an actual miracle. He took this little bit of food and made all of this food. Another interpretation is that there was a lot more food in the crowd than anyone would let on, and when one person shared, others began to share, and it may have been the original potluck dinner, I don't know. But anyways, I like that interpretation, but whatever happened, the significance is that they started with something very small and something incredible happened. We make the mistake sometimes of thinking we need an awful lot to accomplish anything. You know, I'm going to get started as soon as I have more money, more education, more time. When I have all of those things, then I'm really, really going to get involved and make a difference. And sometimes maybe we're a little bit afraid of losing what we have. We think we don't have much and we want to hang on to it. And so this is also about trust and saying, whatever I have, I'm willing to share, I'm willing to give up. We pray, give us this day our daily bread. And that's a prayer of trust. That's a prayer that says, I am confident that I will have enough. I don't have to keep it. I don't have to hoard it. I can share it with somebody else. If we had read earlier in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus had just told the parable of the mustard seed, which says, out of the tiniest little bit, great abundance can happen. I have never really seen a mustard plant in person, but I am told they are enormous, and it comes from a tiny, tiny seed. Sometimes, to accomplish great things, it requires just a little bit of imagination. Maybe I should say it requires just a little bit of faith. It's a hard one for us with our 21st century minds to think about a little imagination and a little faith We want science. We want reason. We want all of those things, don't we? We want it all laid out for us in a package. We want a business plan. We want to know exactly how this is going to work. I remember reading about Mother Teresa when she first went to her superiors with her business plan. And she said to them, when they asked her what she wanted to do, she said, "I want to open a home for the dying in Calcutta." They said, "Well, that's a lovely idea, Mother Teresa. And tell us, what resources do you have?" She said, "Well, I have 3 pennies. And they looked at her and said, "Oh, Mother Teresa, you can't do anything with 3 pennies. She said, "You're right, but with God and 3 pennies, I can." We know the rest of that story. Jesus had a concern for the whole person. I'm sure when they were gathered that day, he was talking about their spiritual hunger. But he also cared about their broken bodies, and he cared about their empty stomachs. And that's really the story here. We don't hear what he said to them. We don't hear anything about that. We know that he had compassion and touched and healed and fed. And that's what was going on in this story. I have a friend who works in the Thorncliffe Park neighborhood. And he and his family went to Arizona for the summer. I guess it wasn't warm enough for them here. I'm not sure what would possess anyone to spend the summer in Arizona. But he posted some pictures of this church they visited in Arizona, which is just absolutely beautiful. And I thought, oh, that's nice. So I do things like this. I went on their website to look, and I looked, and I looked, and I looked for one word about the poor and saw nothing. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but not one word about those who don't have enough, as they tell us all about their beautiful multi-million-dollar church and all of the things that are in it. I'm sure they would also tell you how much they are preaching the gospel and how they are reaching out in their community in so many wonderful ways. And perhaps they are, I kind of like the words of St. Francis when he says, "Always preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words." Don't tell people, show people how much you care. And then you will earn the right to be heard. I went to work in Regent Park just about 5 years ago. It was a vocational call that went back a lot longer than that. It was in 1995 that I had a sense that I was to be in Regent Park. I had been there as a teenager. My father was the Salvation Army officer there. I had worked in that community and volunteered in that community. And I had a strong sense that that's where I wanted to be. I got there in, 1999, I think I got there. I forget the numbers, my mind is all over the place, but it took about 17 years to finally get into that community. There was things that I had to have happen in my life before I could go there. But when I was arriving there, I was told that I was to do mission development work for the United Church in Regent Park. Nobody really explained to me what that was. Nobody told me how I was supposed to do that. They said, "You're not planting a church, you're here to do a community ministry." I said, "That's great, what's a community ministry?" And they said, "We don't know." And I said, "Great." So I had a blank canvas to paint with, and there I went. Been there about 5 years. We've tried some things that worked, we've tried some other things that didn't work. I don't know if you know much about Regent Park. It's Canada's first social housing community. It's being torn down and rebuilt, because I think somewhere along the way we realized putting 10,000 people together who are all on social assistance doesn't work very well. And so it's being rebuilt as a blended community. Certainly that's something that Jane Jacobs taught us a long time ago. If you've ever read any of her stuff, she said, planned social housing communities are a big mistake. We need to build communities where everyone lives together. Housing and urban development in the States is doing the same thing now. They refuse to build strictly social housing communities anymore. They're all blended, and that's what's happening. So the old housing is being torn down. New housing is being built. People are moving in. They're buying condos. New amenities are being built. It's a lot of bricks and mortar. It's a lot of urban planning going on. And it's a big job. It's probably 10 more years before everything is said and done. We're in phase 3 of 5, and it's a big, big job. The biggest job of all, and the hardest job of all, is not the bricks and mortar. It's building community. It's building social cohesion. And that is a much more difficult task. There was always community in Regent Park, as difficult as it was, and perhaps because of some of the difficulties, people stuck together and supported one another, and they had each other's back. And so now, trying to take what was a strong community and make it a bigger, fuller, more even stronger community is difficult. One of the things that I've been doing a lot of is interfaith work, working particularly with people in the Muslim community. They're by far the most visible religious community in Regent Park. Several years ago, we decided we were going to do an interfaith workshop. And we got some people together and ended up actually holding it in the old Salvation Army Citadel, which was interesting for me. But we needed some food. And I heard about a woman, Saraya Ibrahim, who was a community leader who had some women that were starting a catering business. So we went to talk to her and say, could you provide food for 60 people on this Saturday? She said, yes, we could do chicken and rice and salad. And I said, oh, that sounds great. And how much would you charge us for this? And she thought for a minute. She said, would it be okay if we charged you $4 a plate? And I said, I think that would be fine. I said, how about if we give you $5 a plate? And she said, oh, that would be wonderful. So I think now they charge a lot more than that because they figured a few things out. But they came and the food was wonderful. And they've since grown a remarkable catering business. And we were their first ever customer, actually. And Saraya told me that afterwards, the women were together and were talking about this amazing thing that happened. Someone paid more for the food than they asked for. And they said to Saraya, how did that happen? And she said to them, that's what happens when you deal with real Christian people. And I thought, thank God she caught me on a good day. But I also thought, this is probably the best $60 I ever spent in my entire life. Tiny amount has paid huge dividends. There are still great challenges in our community. Just a few weeks ago on Canada Day, we had a shooting about a block from my office. A couple of weeks later, or just a few days later, we had a community safety meeting. And after the meeting, Saraya said to me, Kevin, we're going to do a vigil where the young man was shot. Come with us. I've learned my lesson over the years that when Saraya says, come with us, I just drop whatever I'm doing and go with her. It's a good plan. And so we got there, and there was a woman who knew the young man who had his picture and some flowers, and we taped them onto the hydro pole, and then we talked a little bit, and she shared some about him because none of us really knew him. He actually was from my community of St. Jamestown, not Regent Park. Saraya cried and said, he was a young black man, she said, too many black lives are being lost, young black lives. And it was a very touching and moving time. When all was sort of wrapping up, I went over to the woman and said, I work with the United Church. Do you think, or would you be okay if I said a prayer? And she said, oh yes, I'm a woman of faith. I would love for you to say a prayer. So we got everyone's attention again, and we stood in a circle, and I said, I've been told that it's okay if I say a prayer, and so we're going to do that. Somebody said, let's join hands. So we joined hands in a circle. There was Christian people, Muslim people, there was a couple of police officers, there were people of other faiths, people of no faith. About 20 of us held hands and stood around that post And I said a prayer on all of our behalf. And I thought, I'm never sure from one day to the next what I'm doing or how I'm doing it or why I'm doing it. But at that moment, I realized that whatever it is, this is what it's supposed to be. This is community. This is life the way it is meant to be lived in this community. I'm often unsure of what I'm doing. I often ask the question, is it really making a difference? Is it really significant? And some days, if I'm really honest, it feels like it isn't. But once in a while, the curtain gets pulled back just a little bit and you get a glimpse of what it's supposed to be. And so every morning, you get out of bed and say, yes, I'm going to do it again. I am going to bother. I am going to take risks. I am going to get involved because I don't see that I really have any other choice.